That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. I'm Gabriel, That Money Guy, it makes sense. And join us for the next hour whilst I do one thing. I make one promise to you. You stick around and you will be better with money in 1 hour than you are right now. Because let's face it, the odds are you've probably had zero education when it comes to money. You have had zero finance lessons in school. University, what money lessons there? I mean, life, unfortunately, requires you to know a lot about money. Whether you like it or not, you earn it, you spend it, it comes in and out. And unfortunately, it affects a lot of choices that you make in life. So that's exactly why we've made an entire show to basically make you better with it. Sounds pretty good, right? I think so, in my humble opinion. Anyway, every single week, we take you through a finance journey, let's call it. I like to kick you off by giving you those updates that are happening in the news. Not the boring stuff, not the really negative stuff that's just going to make you super depressed. But instead of that, we're going to tell you about the key economic news that actually affects the money in your pocket. I think that's a pretty good deal. We then also like to bring in some incredible guests, experts, famous faces to share us some of their own personal finance stories, their knowledge, and their expertise. And this week we have Louise Hill, the co-founder and CEO of GoHenry, you know, just that tiny little company that's absolutely destroying the market when it comes to helping young people, children especially, with their money. And also Lottie White, the founder of MyoMaster. You might have heard that name from Dragon's Den if you've ever watched it. If not, you might want to give it a little Google. An unbelievable pitch. But I'm not going to give too much away because otherwise you're not going to stick around. I mean, yeah. Let's keep some secrets. Let's hold some things back. I know I'm being a bit too honest here, but that's just how it is. Anyway, I did promise you that we always start off with what's going on in the economy. We like to call it an economy blitz because what we're really basically doing is getting all of the knowledge that would have taken you hours to figure out and read on your own. We digest it, we download it, and we give it to you in a beautiful, digestible format. So, you're welcome. But what's actually been happening in the world of finance right now? Well, I don't know if anyone's aware here. I mean, if you are an investor, this is something that you probably should be aware of. In fact, even if you don't invest money, this is something you should be aware of. But last week, well, kind of let me do the maths here. Friday a week ago, we had a little bit of a market crash. People thought it was doomsday. We were going into recession, you know, withdraw all of your money from the stock market, being screamed all over social media because everything is crashing and everything is going to hell. Don't worry, guys. It's kind of come out okay. I mean, things have still crashed. The stock market in general, in particular the US stock market, is still lower this month than it was last month. But I think like the super crazy market crash recession situation that most people thought was about to happen, that pretty much came out of the blue on Friday a week ago, is kind of easing out. So let me kind of share with you exactly what happened. So economic news, what came out of the US, that unemployment was not doing really well. I mean, that's kind of an understatement. There was really weak job data coming out of the US. And at the moment, I feel like just the whole finance world, the finance community is being super sensitive. So they had expectations, things were worse than they expected, and they panicked. And all of a sudden, the stock market, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, all of these big indices that track the biggest companies in the US started to crash. How bad was it? Well, the NASDAQ saw a 6.3% drop on over the weekend from Friday to Monday. That's not great. But it wasn't just bad in the US. I mean, markets all over the world were crashing. And in particular, one market that crashed more than most was the Japanese market that fell over 12%. Now, these sound a bit crazy. Imagine your money. Imagine you've got £100 sat in an account that you've been investing into and 12%, 12 quid was just gone like that overnight. I mean, you could extrapolate that out. Imagine you had £100,000 and all of a sudden, you know, like 12,000 was gone like that. Pretty scary stuff. So what else happened? It can't have just been that economic news. Well, you are right. Japan decided to raise interest rates. So traditionally, and over the past, well, over a really long period of time, Japan's had really low interest rates. In fact, so low that at points they've actually been negative. Compared to the UK, most of you should know this by now, but our interest rates right now are 5%. Japan had negative ones. Well, the Japanese, well, what do you call it? The Bank of Japan? I don't know what their central bank is called, but the central bank in Japan decided to start raising interest rates. And long story short, that essentially caused a lot of, you know what? I'm actually going to give you the long story. I've changed my mind, okay? Low interest rates in Japan. People from America were basically borrowing money from Japan because there was really low interest rates, which make it really attractive to borrow. They would then convert that money into dollars and put that into the US stock market. Japan started to increase interest rates. They were like, crap, we need to pay back all of these loans, pull the money back out the stock market, convert it back into Japanese currency and pay back off those loans. Can you see things happening here? People pulling money out of the stock market crashes. So that kind of happened. I probably gave you a little bit too much context and making you panic if you do have any kind of money in the stock market. But let me share with you what I was doing during that entire time, okay? This was my, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of sharing financial knowledge, expertise, coming to an absolute culmination when I knew the stock market was crashing, my money was disappearing before my eyes on my account. And here was the incredibly smart tactic I did. Nothing. That's right. I did absolutely nothing. I could not care less about this stock market crash. And I really hope that that isn't surprising news to you. But if that is surprising to you, why was I doing nothing with my investments when I was literally losing money in front of my eyes? Like, did I know what was going to happen? Did I know that things were going to kind of come out okay? No, not really. I mean, even still today, compared to a month ago, the S&P 500 is down 5% and the Nasdaq is down 9%. But, and now this is the really important part, I am a long-term investor. What do I mean by a long-term investor? I mean that my money is being invested for at least 10 years. My objective is actually to keep that money away for at least 20, if not 30 years. So why do I really care what happens over a week? I mean, the market has crashed so many times since I started investing. And do you know what I do? I actually look at it and think, that looks like a sale to me. I mean, the price of the stock market goes down and I'm like, I'm gonna buy some of that. That price is cheaper than I was buying it for a month ago. Not, oh my God, panic, pull my money out, because I know that I don't need that money. That money is being put away for a long, long time. And that is why I did nothing. That is why I did not panic. That I've seen this all before. And so many people do panic. And let me tell you why you probably don't need to panic. I mean, even if we just zoom out the stock market. So I told you just now, the S&P is down 5% from this time last month. But if we go all the way back to January 1st, 2024, it's up 13%. Now, bear in mind that the average return of the stock market year on year, the S&P 500 is 10%. It's up 13% and we're only in August. And that includes a 5% crash over the past month. That is what I mean by I'm not doing anything. I don't care, because it's all about perspective. You zoom out and the stock market continues to grow over the long term. And that is why I couldn't give a crap about that little crash. I mean, even the Nasdaq, by the way, that's an indices that tracks the top technology companies in the US. That's down 9% from this time last year, which most people, not this time last year, this time last month, which is crazy and would have most people panicking. But again, zoom out from January the 1st of this year to today, and it's up 13.4%. Cool? Everyone understand why I'm not panicking? We're looking at average returns of 10% every single year with investing. We don't care what happens year to year because we're in it for the long term. So that would be my advice to myself whenever I see these kind of things happening. Do not panic. Remember your time horizon. There is a reason why you're a long-term investor. Cool. That was a good lesson in that. I think that was a good lesson in that. I was kind of calming myself down as well there a little bit, because you never know. I mean, even as a long-term investor, I still do see these stock market crashes and I wouldn't call it real money, but kind of the paper money, you know, literally like the digital amount that's sitting on the screen there, despite kind of me not withdrawing and having that in hard cash. I still look at it withdrawing and there is something inside of me that's like, what happens if it goes really bad this time? But you've got to have an idea of what your strategy is and you've got to stick to that strategy. What else is going on? Because we don't want to just talk about stock market crashes. Well, we have some new research by Visa that found out that 45% of Gen Zs now have a side hustle. Big up the Gen Zs. I am actually, whether you know it or not, I'm actually Gen Z. I'm born in 1997. I'm kind of that cusp of millennials, not millennial. Yeah, it is millennial. Millennial Gen Z. Like, I kind of am aware of all the millennial stuff and kind of lived through that myself. But legally and technically, I am a Gen Z. And I'm also one of the 45% of Gen Zs that have a side hustle because, I'm not. I just realized my side hustle was social media and then I quit my job and started doing it full time. So I don't have a side hustle anymore. That's really sad. I'm going to have to pick up a side hustle one. We'll come up with a few things. Maybe I'll ask the audience to vote what I should be doing as a side hustle. Anyway, enough about me. So what are the biggest side hustles for the Gen Z? Well, we've got 34% doing e-commerce. We have 25% social media influencers. Thank you. I don't know. I kind of put my hand up there for those listening. I don't know why I did that again. I'm not a side hustler anymore. Passion-based projects, 19%. And almost 69% of Gen Z side hustlers set up their businesses with the primary objective of earning extra income. Yeah, that makes sense. And the average side hustle currently is earning £218.60 a month. That is incredible. I'm actually super impressed by Gen Zs earning that much extra dough. So well done if you are doing a side hustle. If you're not, no pressure. It's not compulsory. You don't have to do a side hustle just because everyone on the internet seems to be doing a side hustle. Apparently, I'm not doing a side hustle. I'm sure there's something I'm doing. Oh, I'm looking after a dog and getting paid. Does that count as a side hustle? Honestly, I'm digressing far too much here. My advice in general, though, is if you do have that passion project, that thing you want to do, just go for it. And if you can do it consistently over a long period of time, that side hustle could become a main hustle, like what happened to me. But I don't want everyone listening right now to feel pressured to be doing a side hustle, be doing something on the side, to be earning extra income. If you just want to work your 9 to 5 and focus on that and build your career and go home at 5 o'clock and put your feet up because you're done with working and you don't want to have people shouting down your ear like, why aren't you doing extra work? Why don't you have a second job on the side? I think that's completely fine. Anyway, cool study though. 45% of Gen Zs. People say we're lazy, right? 45% of us are doing side hustles. Lazy what? All right. Well, that's the news. Pretty good news, actually. Normally, it's quite negative in the studio, but I'm feeling hyped after all of that. But stick around, because straight after this, I've got Louise Hill, this co-founder and CEO of GoHenry, joining me on That Money Show.
FUBAR Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out
loads of their
saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic?
I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
And there's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer went... got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can...
Oh, no, they still make it, but I just don't... maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, Ola, how are you? No.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. If you don't know who I am, and if you're just tuning in, I'm Gabriel, That Money Guy. That's why we call it That Money Show, That Money Guy. I know it's very, very smart. It took a lot of people in one very large room to come up with that name. I'm just kidding, guys. Anyway, coming up soon, I am going to be speaking to Louise Hill, the co-founder and CEO of GoHenry. About one topic in particular, and I really do wonder if anyone's heard this term recently, because it's been all over social media. The term is doom spending. Anyone heard of doom spending? I don't know why I'm asking that like out into like the ethernet when you guys can't actually reply, unless you're shouting down your headphones right now going, oh, I doom spend all the time. If so, firstly, well done to you for admitting that you're a doom spender. But let me quickly break down and explain a little bit about doom spending. But first, even before I do that, let me shock you with some statistics. So there's a recent study that found that 43% of millennials and 35% of Gen Zs, that's right, me, a Gen Z, doing better than a millennial. I mean, not by a lot. But anyway, 35% of Gen Zs, 43% of millennials doom spend. Just to make themselves feel better. But what is doom spending? And are you potentially even doing doom spending without knowing? And I'm going to dive into this loads with Louise very, very, very shortly. But doom spending, just to kind of give you a little bit of like a tickle so you have a vague understanding, is this idea that we like to spend our money on lots of stuff because we kind of look at what's going on in the world, the price of stuff going up crazily, and we think to ourselves, yeah, we're never going to be able to afford, you know, buying a house, potentially having a family, you know, all the things that cost a lot of money in life. So instead, we're like, do you know what? If I'm not going to afford that, I'm going to give my puppy the best life of its entire life. Like, we're going to pamper it. I'm going to pamper myself. I'm going to stay in the nicest hotels. I'm going to go on the best holidays, because what's the point of actually saving any money? I would much, much, much rather just spend it now, because there is no point in spending. There really is no point in spending. This is the whole doom spending idea, right? Everything is doom and gloom. Ultimately, this generation will never be able to afford homes, to be all those kind of big things, those things that require huge amounts of money, because, you know, the cost of everything is going up like crazy. And I suppose I'm in it right now. But that's why I wanted to get the opinion of an absolute expert. And I am joined right now by Louise Hill, the CEO and the co-founder of GoHenry. And we're going to talk all things doom spending. So, Louise, do I have you? Can you hear me loud and clear? Not quite yet. We're going to sort it out so that Louise can hear us in just a second, because she is the expert, and I'm going to ask her so many questions about doom spending, and I would be so interested to hear from people. Remember, you can always DM us at That Money Show to find out, or to kind of tell us about your own doom spending stories, if this is starting to resonate with you, this idea that you spend a lot more money because you look to the future and you think to yourself, I don't really know what I can do. And I feel like it's a really like interesting thing, because ultimately, here's my opinion, and I know that I might get a lot of hate for this right now, but ultimately, I think that we kind of look at these big milestones that cost a lot of money, things like getting on the property ladder, and we are doing this doom spending. It clearly is happening because we think we can never achieve that thing, like jumping on the property ladder. But a lot of generations before us, I know it might have been easier, they still looked at those goals and thought to themselves, like, bloody hell, I am absolutely never, ever going to get to that period in my life. Like, that seems so far away, so difficult, so impossible. And I get that. I mean, if their generation were doing it, that means our generation's also doing it, okay? So I want to first tell people that are listening, like, please don't feel alone. This isn't new to our generation, looking at these big goals and getting scared off. But the truth is, by taking part in this doom spending, by spending quite a lot of money on things just to make yourself happy today because you don't think you'll ever be able to save enough up enough to hit those big milestones, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. You'll never even get allowing yourself to start that race, okay? Because there are so many tools out there available to help you start saving towards the milestones. There are schemes, the help to buy scheme, the LISAs, all these kind of things that allow you to actually achieve those goals. All it actually requires is you to maybe stop doom spending for just a second and start building a plan. This is what I like to say. And this, again, isn't me saying that right now it isn't super difficult to even make a realistic plan to kind of achieving those goals today. But ultimately, a plan requires baby steps and you have to start building them slowly and slowly and slowly. I am aware that the cost of living, like the difference between the previous generation and our generation, I am on the side that it's today is harder than it has ever been before. But let me talk you through kind of my ideology and my steps and why I don't think doom spending is the answer, okay? Because ultimately, right now, if you're in your 20s, if you're in your 30s, the truth is you should be technically at your lowest earning capacity, okay? And what does that mean? That means you might feel to yourself, I can't save anything. I barely make enough to cover X, Y, and Z. So what's the point of saving anything? I may as well spend it. I'm never going to hit those targets. But theoretically, your salary should be going up and up and up and up. I mean, we spoke about side hustles in the thing before. You might add some side hustles. And generally, as you get to your 30s, as you get to your 40s, your income should start to increase. Now, imagine if you're someone that never saved throughout your 20s and 30s because you thought to yourself, I wasn't earning enough. What's the point? I may as well doom spend. And you get to your 40s and you start realizing, like, holy crap, like, I'm earning quite a lot. I've never saved throughout my 20s and 30s. I'm not going to start in my 40s. That would genuinely be your thought process, right? You're going to think to yourself, like, I would never start in my 40s. Like, it's too late for me, right? Whereas imagine this other scenario, okay? You're in your 20s. You're earning, okay, let's say potentially not a lot. The average salary for someone maybe in London are around £2,000, £2,000, let's say, as kind of a graduate. I think that is around average. That's before tax, by the way. You think to yourself, what's the point? Maybe even you could put away £20. Maybe you could have put away £50, but you thought to yourself, that really does nothing for me. But what you don't realize is by doing that, number one, you're building yourself a habit. So by the time you do start to earn significant money down the line, you know what you're doing, right? You've already started it. You can then start putting away £100, £200, £300, £400 a month because you know that feeling. You know that feeling of putting money away for a future date, okay? Number two, and this is more of a mathematical approach, but it's this idea that £50 invested every single month over a 30-year period can result in some crazy numbers. I don't have the maths in front of me right now. If you type in onto the internet, investment calculator, open any of them, give yourself a 10% average return, which is what the stock market does return on average. Stick away 50, stick away £100 every single month and see what happens after 30, 40 years. I promise you, your eyes will be open and you'll be like, crap, I probably should start saving that 50, 100, £150. Now, I am actually going to start arguing against myself for a minute, okay? Because there is also the argument that your version of you today also deserves to be happy. I often have this phrase, like, why do you have to save for future you? Why does future you get to be happy with all of your money? But current you today doesn't. Current you today doesn't get to enjoy that money. Current you today has to suffer. Current you today has to be super frugal. Current you today can't go out for a nice meal because you're saving all of that money for a future version of you. No, I completely disagree with that sentiment. Both current version of you today and future version of you should get to be happy, should get to use some of that money that you're working so hard to earn. So how do we find this balance? Because balance is arguably one of the most important words when it comes to pretty much anything in life, but in particular, your finances. And this is how you're going to do it, okay? Regardless of how much you can start saving right now, you are going to start saving for a long-term goal. I don't care if it's 5, I don't care if it's 10, and I don't care if it's £50. Whatever it is, start building the habit. Then what you're going to start to do is see if you can actually increase it. See if you can start putting away even more than that, okay? Push yourself to the limit. But, and here's the big but, I don't want you to destroy your life in order to do so, okay? So be tactical, be clever, okay? Do you need to be living out of home at the age of 23, 24 years old if it means you can't save anything? Do you have that option to live at home? If so, that could be a great way for you to save money. Do you need to be eating out 5 days a week? Maybe not, but once, twice, 3 times a month, that sounds like a pretty fair deal to me. Especially if you're going out, you want to socialize, you want to see your friends. That seems like a pretty fair deal to me. And this is, if any of you have ever heard of a guy called Ramit Sethi, well, Ramit Sethi probably says one of the best kind of lines, I think, when it comes to this possible, okay? Spend ferociously, spend aggressively, spend to your heart's content on the things that you love, but only do that if you're able to cut back intensely on the things that you don't love. What does that mean? You love going traveling, you love holidays, amazing. Go on that amazing holiday once a year that you've got your eyes set on, okay? Save up and really like treat yourself and live to your heart's content. But I can't believe you're also driving a BMW. Like, how are you leasing a BMW at the same time? You just don't care that much about cars. You're doing it to impress other people, okay? Do you see what I mean by balance? Pick one, yeah? Happy for you to lean into one and don't pick the other. And here's what else you're going to do, okay? This is how you're going to actually hit those massive financial goals in life, okay? When you do get that raise, when you do start that side hustle and start to bring in a few extra 100 quid every single month, you're not going to just start spending it. You're not going to start to think to yourself, oh, where can that money actually go to improve my current lifestyle? You're going to reward yourself. Of course, if you get a raise, you need to go out. Go have a nice meal. Go have those celebration drinks with your family, with your friends, with your colleagues. But stick as much of that away as possible. Try to maintain the current standard that you are living at so that ultimately you can increase that gap between what's coming in and what you're spending, okay? If you can increase that gap between how much you need to spend and how much you're earning, that's your savings, right? And if that gap gets bigger and bigger throughout your life, that is personal finance 101. That's how you're gonna hit the big goals. And that, my friends, is how you're gonna stop doom spending. Spend on the things you love. Don't spend on the things you don't love. Doom spending, no offense, it's so old-fashioned. It's so unpopular. It's just ultimately an excuse. And that's all there is. Anyway, that, my friends, is all I have to say about doom spending. And stick around. There's more coming up straight after this.
Fubar Radio. Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral. And there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of
that,
their
yeah.
saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
3 words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that.
Fella.
That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah. strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuck boy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can
they still make it, but I just don't... Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, hola, how are you? No.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, and welcome back to That Money Show. All right, so I am being joined now by the founder and CEO of MyoMaster, Lottie White. I'm just going to see quickly if she can hear me all right. Lottie, are you able to hear me at all right now? Because she is on the screen in front of me and I'm really excited to talk to her because I don't know if any of you have kind of seen the Dragon's Den episode. It was pretty bloody cool. So if we can get through this small technical issue, we will be able to jump on with her. But I'm just going to give you a little bit of a background. So she got...
Yeah, I can. How are you? Yeah, how are you?
I think we're live in the studio. Lottie, hi. How are you?
Yeah, I can.
Amazing. How are you doing, Lottie? Welcome to That Money Show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for bearing with us well. I mean, it's good we can finally hear each other loud and clear. So I did try and give a little bit of context behind MyoMaster, obviously the famous Dragon's Den episode. But then you jumped into my ears, so I didn't want to give too much away. But it'd be great, obviously, to hear from you, the actual founder of MyoMaster, a little bit about, you know, who you are and why did you end up on that episode in the first place?
So I'm the founder of MyoMaster, and we started the business about 4 years ago. We are the home of human optimization. And what that really means is we're helping people optimize their everyday health so they can deliver at their peak performance every single day. And typically our customer is people like me who are kind of 30 to 55 year olds. They've often got families, they've got jobs, they're trying to do a lot of things, stay fit and healthy for all their different responsibilities in life. And we give you tools and education to help you do that. Everything from ice baths to saunas to sleep supplements coming soon.
I mean, pretty cool. Okay, so I'm 27, so not quite there yet. But I mean, I've looked on your website and I kind of want everything that you sell because I'm sports obsessed. I mean, right now I'm trying out, I don't know if you can see on my wrist, I'm trying out a Whoop. So you can tell I'm taking it seriously. That recovery serious. Last night we're at 85% from our recovery on my sleep. That's not bad. That's not bad.
That's pretty good going.
Thank you very much. But I suppose you said there's a lot of stuff that you guys have. You mentioned a whole bunch of tools, you know, ice baths, all the kind of key recovery stuff. But what differentiates you, I suppose, from anything else recovery on the market?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points of differentiation. First of all, the fact that we are building the home of human optimization. We're not just an ice bath company, or we're not just a massage gun company. We really think about this holistically. And for us, it's really about, like, you might be someone who detests ice baths. Like, they just don't work for you.
Yeah.
But you get in a sauna 4 times a week and you feel unbelievable. That really helps you mentally and physically. So we're really trying to help guide you to find the right protocols for you and not kind of force anything down your throat that doesn't work for you. And my kind of view on wellness is that different things work for different people.
Okay, I have to say, the home of human optimization is the coolest line I think I've ever heard from any company ever. I'm just going to throw that out there. Whoever came up with that, I mean, if it was you, you get a raise, but whoever it was, that is so wicked.
probably someone really clever in my team. I'm not going to take credit.
No, that's fair enough. And sorry, I interrupted you halfway through.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I was going to say is that we're just a brand with a really authentic story, whom we're kind of approaching in a slightly different way in terms of trying to be really authentic about how we're building it. We're quite open and honest, and we try not to be like too much on our high horse about, like, you know, you have to be doing this protocol, you have to be using compression trousers, etc. We try to just make it relatable, and we understand that our customer might not be into, for instance, like the deepest science, but they want something that's digestible for them to receive. So I guess the brand element of it is the other point of differentiation.
I like that. It's this whole idea of range of options, rather than, like you said, there are some companies that are like, ice bath is the only way. And I've gotten into an ice bath, and I'm begging you, please do not make that the only way, because it hurts. It really, really, really bloody hurts. So I think the next thing that I have to ask you about, and I did kind of allude to it at the beginning, was the Dragon's Den episode. For those of you that haven't seen it, I mean, I think it aired about 6 months ago-ish.
Yeah, I guess.
When you guys went on Dragon's Den, you pitched Myo Master, everything you've just told me, and you got, was it four offers that you ended up getting? And it was one of the most impressive pitches, I think, in history, evidently, as said by the Dragons themselves.
Yeah, I think actually the offers were the least impressive bit about it, to be honest. Like, I think the reaction after it aired was genuinely mind-blowing. Like, I think we're up to like nearly 30 million views on the clips, and the BBC have called it the most masterful pitch ever in the Den, which we'll happily take that accolade. And so that for us was like the real achievement. We couldn't ask for organic reach. We couldn't pay for reach like that, you know, as a small business. And to have that many people watch our story and kind of back us, I don't think we got one negative comment, not one.
Unreal.
And that kind of blew my mind. So that's really been just a truly amazing experience, both for the brand and like personally.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically my follow-up question, which is, how has that ultimately affected the business in and of itself? Because of course you're going in there, and when you're going in there, you're kind of going in there to pitch, right? You're getting investors. Obviously, it's a different way of getting investors. There are a bunch of cameras around you, and it probably takes a lot longer, and you have to repeat some lines every so often, and all that kind of stuff that happens in the world of showbiz and TV. But ultimately, you're probably quite focused on really impressing the Dragons, and you could never have half imagined, quarter imagined, to get 10% of what happened afterwards. How has that affected and kind of skyrocketed the business in and of itself?
Well, when we filmed the show a year and a half ago.
Wow.
So a lot actually happened between the time we filmed the show and the time it went live. We were actually a much bigger business when the show aired than we were when we pitched. So we had already grown really rapidly, pretty much since we pitched and then till it came out. And then when it came out, it was kind of phenomenal. We've grown like 800% this year.
Wow.
A lot of it we attribute to the Den. But one thing I will say is a lot of brands go on that show. You know, they have four different businesses per episode. And I think that the series runs for 12 weeks. So there's a lot of different companies. And everyone I spoke to was like, you'll have your moment and then the next week you'll be forgotten. But we have got a really amazing content and marketing team here. And they did such a good job of like sweating every last drop. So people were still talking about us 10 weeks later. And I think the combination of like pitching well and having that team was kind of a perfect storm.
And of course, you got investment from two Dragons. It was Gary and Sarah. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
How has that been following up? Because I know that things do happen after the Den. There's not every investment actually follows through. And I don't know how much you're allowed to say or not allowed to say, but I'd love to know, are you still working with them? What does the picture look like now when it comes to you and the Dragons?
I guess what it changed for us, because like I said, we grew really quickly. And so the money was less important to us, to be honest. We probably didn't need it. Like, that was the reality. But they have been mega supportive, and we're still in contact with them both. And they're like really helping the brand. So it's been an amazing experience.
That's wicked. Okay, I'm going to pull it away from Dragons Den, because obviously the brand is impressive in and of its own right. You've showed that. Right. You spoke about how much it grew, even like between it being filmed and it airing. So there was clearly a lot going right, regardless of whether that episode aired or didn't air. I mean, let's kind of, again, kind of rewind. You started a business. Most people think of starting a business and want to violently vomit because they're like, oh, imagine, you know, throwing everything at a dream, at an idea, and just giving it my all. Was this the first business you ever started? And ultimately, how is this the most successful business? How did you turn it into such a successful business?
Oh, it's definitely the first business I ever started. And for sure, the first 2 years were like a total baptism of fire. I didn't realize like how clueless I was, completely ignorant. It's been really challenging, but equally the best thing I've ever done. Having the freedom to do things on your own terms, create a culture that you love and believe in, and get up every day and do something that you're like 100% behind is incredibly powerful. We invested our life savings in it, so it was and still is incredibly risky. But I think actually that's been beneficial because it's meant we need to make it work. So we're not gonna
let it fail.
I would say the secret is just not giving up, like really. And actually they say like businesses don't fail because they run out of cash. They don't fail because, you know, the product's bad. They just fail because eventually the founders give up. And I truly believe that. Like, I think you could always find a way. And that's kind of my motto. Like, there were many times I wanted to quit, but I just was refused.
How
refused to lose my money.
I was going to say, how open are you to sharing some of those failures? Because the internet is flooded with success stories with everyone. You know, scroll on LinkedIn for a day and you'll want to gouge your eyes out the amount of success stories. I know that I sometimes contribute to that and want to gouge my own eyes out over my own things that I write on there because everyone wants to share the things that are going well. But you've been building a business for a number of years now. So there's obviously been a lot of hurdles. What are some of the biggest ones you've had to face and how have you gotten over that? Because I think that's how other entrepreneurs, other potential future business owners are going to be able to get over them. They see someone else that's done it before them. They know that someone else could do it, so they know they can do it as well. So I want to hear some of them case studies if you're happy to share.
Yeah, I hard agree with you, by the way. One of my most popular posts on LinkedIn is like the 7 biggest mistakes I made running my business.
Let's go through them. Top 7. No, I'm joking. Yeah. You don't have to do all 7 right now.
But I guess the top 2 would probably be, firstly, and I love this saying, if you obsess over the competition, you become a clone. And in the early days, we had, and still do, had competitors who's raised 100 million. And, you know, the most we've ever raised in a round is 200 grand, like not comparable. So I was obsessed with what these bigger businesses were doing for a time. I followed their every move and essentially I tried to imitate what they were doing. And it led us to near bankruptcy because I opened a shop in Westfield because my competitor opened a shop in Westfield. And actually you have to do your own thing and you almost have to shut out the competition and obsess over your own vision and do it in your own way. Because the reason we're doing really well now is because we stay true to who we are. And that is our winning strategy, is being who we are. So that's the first one. And the second one is probably just be ridiculously focused. When I started, I was like selling on Amazon, trying to sell into the David Lloyd and gyms, trying to sell to consumers. Like I was trying to do it all. We were in Selfridges. And the truth is, like, you know, I was a master of nothing, basically. And then when we focused down on one channel, which is our D2C channel, now we're killing it. And that is all we do. And we're just like experts at that thing. And so, yeah, be incredibly focused, I think, is the other piece of advice.
Hours. Freaking wicked advice. And I'm sitting here because obviously I also do my own thing and I'm just like, shit, I got some stuff to learn, honestly. I love that idea of blocking out the competitors because it's so easy to look at someone else and think that's the only way that it can ever be done. So therefore you have to try and mirror it as much as possible. Even not always looking up, looking down at the other people that are just looking right and left and you're seeing what other people are doing. You're like, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm not, you know, I don't have a podcast. Like,
exactly.
I need to have a podcast. Do you? Do you really need to have a podcast? And that kind of flows into your second point, which is you don't have to be doing everything just because that's what they're doing. You can kind of let it flow. And I think that they are both brilliant pieces of advice that I'm kind of neat. I wish I had a pen in here to scribble both of those down, but I'm just going to listen back to the recording of the episode. And I also want to listen to that post to find out the other 5, because like if those were 2 of your biggest mistakes, the other 5 are also going to be absolute gold. I want to know any advice, kind of a key piece of advice that you would give to someone maybe starting out, making that decision as to whether to launch themselves into something they believe in or not. Because I don't think this is straightforward. Obviously now You've got the success. There's been a lot going on that's been going really well. I'm sure you have difficult days as well. But overall, you would never change that decision a million years. But if you go right back to the beginning, there was probably a point where you were thinking about starting this business and had something else happen in your life, you know, had you woken up on the other side of bed, this business may never have happened. You might never have decided to actually take the leap. So if there is someone there that is like that, they don't know whether to quite go and have a crack at their idea, can you give them a practical way that, you know, the answer is yes, you 100% should, and here's how you should do it to make sure that you kind of give yourself every chance at success?
I am a big advocate for the hybrid way of launching a business, which is like, don't quit your job until you have, like, they call it product market fit or some traction or some sales. So I worked every evening and every weekend for about 18 months before I quit my job, and I had a baby in that time as well, so that there was a definite like,
and congratulations.
You know, there was easy, it would have been easy for me to say now is not the right time. And I say to everyone I meet, I'm like, there is no right time, there's never going to be a right time, but you don't have to like go all in to begin with. Like, we created a product, we found a way to manufacture it. And then every weekend I went to a trade show or to like a market, and I tried to physically sell the product, and I would get feedback to iterate it. But also, like, I started getting some sales slowly but surely. And by the time I came to quit my job, we were making, I don't know, maybe like £5,000 a month or something, which was not enough to, you know, replace my salary, etc. But it had proven to me that this was something that people would buy. And then calculated, you know, in terms of savings, how long have I got to not work and to make this last, and was very clear about financially how much time have I got, and also had proven that this was a product that people would buy. So it wasn't just like I came up with an idea and then was like, great, let's do this. And I really advocate for that. I think it's a great way to start a business.
I love that. I think there are too many people telling people that they just have to launch themselves into something, quit their job and just go like dive headfirst into it. I couldn't think of worse advice, like genuinely worse advice. If you're that obsessed with your business, you will find the time, like you were mentioning, your weekends, your evenings, and build it up and prove to yourself that you are committed to something for the long term, and actually you can make pretty much anything successful outside of your 9 to 5. And probably what you'll start to find is your 9 to 5 starts to becoming your 10 to 4 secretly, because, you know, things start leaking into your work hours. And I can admit this now, and it just happens, and you'll realize just how obsessed you're becoming with something. And I love that.
I think
that's
your point about obsession is so key, because it's also like the idea of having a business is really lovely.
It's actually a sexy thing, right?
The graft of like customer service and going out and trying to sell it and people telling you to pee off, you know, because they're not interested, in being rejected over and over again. And only when you do that do you really realize, like, oh my God, I am obsessed with this. Or you might actually be like, actually, it's not for me. So I think that point around discovering whether you are obsessed is really important as well.
Yeah, literally. And then you said a bunch of other things that I would reiterate, which is kind of, you did a financial health check to actually decide, can I survive? You know, if this business does fail, how much runway and how much chance am I giving it to actually succeed? Which was a really, really good point. I want to ask just one final question, which I am going to take us back to Dragon's Den. I know, I'm really sorry. You probably get far too much Dragon's Den. You're like, we're a good business. We don't just do Dragon's Den, guys. Come on. But if there are businesses out there that are considering, you know, taking the leap and going on Dragon's Den, maybe they're given the opportunity to do so, what will make them stand out to the level that you guys did? And I know there was probably a lot of elements that came together, but what's the one thing that you would say, focus on this and that's the best way you can do it?
Oh, I have two pieces of advice. I've actually done quite a few briefing calls this year with the people who are filming, who just filmed for this next series. I kind of had two pieces of advice. The first one was be over prepared. Like, I can't tell you, I locked myself in a hotel room for 48 hours. I watched every episode of Dragon's Den that has ever aired. I wrote down every question and I prepared an answer, which I think is why on the telly you see me like being quite quick to kind of handle the objections, because I literally prepared for that. Like, every question they could have asked, I had an answer for it already prepared. So the first one is be ridiculously over prepared. And the second one is, you know, a bit like I said earlier, they've had thousands of companies on that show, and most of them have up to 7 days of noise or fame, you know, a little bit of a splash, a little bit of a boost in sales, and then it goes away. And we didn't, because we had such a robust and like good marketing strategy around it. Like, we weren't just going to be like share a few clips from the series. Like, we had a million ideas and we executed on them in the lead up and post for about 3 months continuously. So I think if you don't have that support and that internal expertise, it's, you're not ready. Because we were in a position where we had a team to help us who know what they're doing. And so we were able to like 10x the noise because we knew how to do it. But if you're, you know, a one or two man band, I think that's very hard to do. And I'd recommend waiting a couple of years.
There we go. And I think what I'm going to just add to that is that a lot of people might look at you and think you got lucky. I mean, you've literally just proven that luck had absolutely nothing to do with it. A, in the room, you prepared yourself to the point where, you know, you couldn't go wrong. And then afterwards, like you said, you had the plan and you executed on it. And okay, if one thing that you executed on didn't work, you had another, it sounded like you had another 100 things that you were doing at the same time.
For
so
sure.
Something was going to work. Lottie, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story. Yes. There are going to be a lot of entrepreneurs listening. They're going to be like, bloody hell, I absolutely took a lot of value out of that. And I know that that's
Thanks
true because I'm one of them and I'm going to make my notes after this. But yeah, lovely to
we
meet you
that.
And have a great
Thanks
day.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Have a good one.
All right. Wicked. I mean, how cool was Lottie? If you haven't checked out the episode of Mayo Master, just look up Lottie White, Mayo Master, Dragon's Den YouTube, watch it, and that will probably contextualize a lot of what you just heard. Now, I always like to make sure that I answer a few of your questions because you guys DM us. I mean, you might, listening right now, never have DM'd us, but you can at That Money Show on Instagram. Our DMs are open, and at the end of every single show, we go through those DMs and actually answer the questions live on air. So please, if you are too embarrassed to ask something to someone in public, you have our DM to do it in private. Anyway, first question coming up. I'm about to start a master's degree and I'm debating whether to apply for the postgraduate loan. I'll be working part-time and have money saved up, so don't need the loan, but it's nice to have. Any advice? Okay, here's my general advice. If you can afford to do it without putting yourself in further debt, I would recommend not putting yourself in further debt. I don't know if you guys have seen, but interest rates right now on student loans are around 8%. That is very, very, very high. I know that they could change over the future. But ultimately, if you're in a position to either pick between not putting yourself in debt or putting yourself in debt, I would choose the not putting yourself in debt every single day of the week. Now, I know student loans do work differently, blah, 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 blah. But at this stage, That generally is my advice. Don't take it out. If you need to, of course, that's why they're there in the first place. And ultimately, they're not the worst loans. But yeah, that'll be my piece of advice for you. And a last question is, I wanted to buy an iPhone and was going to use Apple's payment scheme. However, I got rejected without an explanation. Will this affect my credit score? Firstly, why are you buying an iPhone? The new ones are literally going to be released in September. Not telling you to buy a new one, but that means the old ones are going to drop in price. So please wait until that happens. But ultimately, will it affect your credit score? You have had a hard check against your credit score, meaning they've had done a hard check and they've rejected you based off that because it's you were asking for a loan, a finance. That is what happens whenever you do anything that requires you borrowing money from an organization, and they'll do a hard check against your name. But it won't actually say on your credit score whether you were rejected or accepted. What will start to affect and negatively affect your credit score is if you start applying for a lot of things and keep getting a lot of rejections, then people are going to start to look at you and be like, what's going on here? He keeps applying for a whole bunch of loans in a really short period of time. This person looks quite risky and therefore we're not going to accept the loan. Okay, these things are going to stay on your file for 12 to 24 months. So it's not that bad in the grad scheme of things. I don't think it will negatively actually impact the number on your credit score. But ultimately, it is a hard check against your credit score, and it's something to be wary of. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. And we only had two questions this week. So I would recommend, if you do have a question, jumping in at That Money Show on Instagram. Just, you know, the little DM button. Just send that question. Ask it. It's not too stupid. I love the questions that you guys think are stupid, but ultimately 90% of people would love to hear the answer to. I'm going to say a quick thank you to Lottie for joining us today and chatting through everything. That was a brilliant interview. And I hope you guys listen back to that repeatedly, because that's what I will be doing. You can listen back to this show on every podcasting platform. You can download the FUBAR Radio app to listen to us live every single week, Monday at 4 o'clock. And I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And like I said, you are now officially better with your money than you were an hour ago. See you next week.